Join the chorus. It's time for another North Melbourne Footy Club update with Dean Vasek and special guests on Hashtag Kangaroos.
Hi, this is Ben McKay from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Here is your host, Dean.
Thank you, Ben McKay. Welcome to another episode. If this is your first time listening to the show, then welcome. My name is Dean Vasek, and you can find me on Twitter at Hashtag Kangaroos or on Instagram at Hashtag Kangaroos Podcast. I'm also on TikTok as well, now at Hashtag Kangaroos 1. So tonight I have the lovely ladies back on Wednesday, Marnie Cohen and Siobhan Rowe. There was a lot to go through. We talked about the game and what we got out of that, and also previewed the Port game coming up on Saturday. There was plenty more, so strap yourself in because it is a long episode, and I'll bring on the girls right now to talk about it.
I welcome back Marnie and Siobhan. Girls, welcome back. Good to have you on again. A lot to go through, and Siobhan, it wasn't an easy game to watch on Sunday, but there were some positives. How did you see the game?
Well, I came straight from work to the ground, Dean, and I got there at quarter time and I thought I haven't missed much. And then by the time halftime rolled around, I certainly hadn't missed anything either. It was one of the strangest games I've ever been to be honest with you. I was making jokes with the people around me saying, is there a cyclone happening out on the ground that we're not seeing? Because under the roof at Marvel Stadium, to not kick a goal on North side and for St Kilda to only have scored two to half time, it was just a strange game to watch. It was also some strange things that happened during the game. I will get to Jai Simkin a bit later, but watching him throw away Mateus Philippou's GPS and just Cam Zerha's yips, and there was just a lot of weird things going on. Unfortunately, it was another loss for us, but there were positives to take away from the game. I thought we structured up better. I think the effort you couldn't question, but unfortunately, I had my head in my hands a lot of the time with just some of the skills. I still think that's where we are let down so much. I think basic skill errors really hurt us. And lucky enough on the weekend, it didn't really result in a lot of goals to St Kilda to punish us for those poor kicking skills. But I think Nick Larkey probably needs some help in that forward 50. It just seemed every time we went to kick it in there, the kicks either didn't hit a target or we were just getting out red because we were going to Larkey so often. And one man can only do so much. But to answer your question, I think it was just a very strange game of footy. And unfortunately, we were on the wrong end of the result again, but probably a better performance overall compared to the last few weeks that we can try and dissect a bit further.
Yeah, Marnie, we talked about effort last week and whether we had seen it in the previous few weeks, but we couldn't question effort on Sunday, could we?
Yeah, I was buzzing. I think there's something wrong with me that I was so excited by that performance on Sunday. Watch us kick 4-9 goals, and I'm sitting here thinking it's the best thing that's ever happened. No, but the effort, I think that's 100% Dean. Like, for me, I just wanted to see us give something. We have barely made a whimper since Good Friday. And it's just, you know, you sit here and think, well, we're sitting here now and we've seen three very good performances, two wins out of the three. We've seen one that had a bit of both, a bit of good and a bit of ugly against Hawthorn. But the last 3 weeks have just been absolutely miserable. So I'm sitting here thinking, all right, well, what are we going to get today? Were the first 4 weeks of the season just, you know, a bit of a honeymoon and it's over, and now I've come crashing back down to landing and this is actually the reality of where we're at? But it's really pleasing to see that we actually had an answer to stopping the opposition scoring goals. Now, part of that was helped by St Kilda's terrible kicking in front of goal, and it wasn't helped by our terrible kicking in front of goal. But I think I felt like we were in the game for most of the game, and the frustrating part about that is there was no one to register a score. And I think if we did have someone else that was actually kicking straight and it wasn't just left on Larky's shoulders, we actually really would have been a big chance to win that game. And I think that's the most pleasing part about it is we obviously have a formula and it will work and it'll all come together in time. But you can kind of, as Siobhan said, like you kind of see what we're trying to do. There was a bit more structure. There was a bit more of a game plan. We stopped the bleeding that we experienced. I mean, we were 8 goals down at quarter time against the D's last week. So to have stop to the bleeding the way we did against St Kilda, that was really pleasing for me. And it just shows that we do have bits and pieces of what it takes. It's just going to take a bit of a while to gel together and bring it to life.
Yeah. Siobhan, I guess our best players on the weekend, some of our best players, were Zeebel, Goldstein and Shields, along with Sheezel and a few others. Is it a worry that some of our best are probably in the last couple of years of their career now?
It's a really good point, Dean, because I actually was speaking to my dad post the game and he goes, who did you think were the better players on the ground? And I named those three. And then I thought, be funny that I've named probably three of the most senior guys on the ground. I mean, undoubtedly, Jack Zeebel was our best and he continues to just toil away. There's not much more I can say about him. I've had number 7 on the back of my jumper for years and that man really is the heart and soul of the footy club. And I'd like to make the point that I actually still think that he's the on-field leader and the on-field captain. I've been slightly disappointed in Simkin and McDonald's leadership on the ground so far. I know we're 8 games in. Don't come for me for that comment, but I just feel as though Jack Zeebel's still the on-field captain. And he is leading by example, not only in his words, but his actions out on the ground. He's a true shin boner. But to go back to your question, Dean, I think it does concern me that we are still very heavily reliant on Zeebel and Shields. Shields particularly, his tackling, he led that tackle count again. And I think we want to see a bit more in the youngsters in terms of their tackling potentially. Just that worried me a little bit. And Goldie clearly is a warrior in the ruck for us. But I would like to see more younger players continue to be in our best and not so heavily rely on the leaders over the course of the year. I thought LDU was really good in the game too. If he had kicked that goal in the last term where he just probably bent the ball back a little bit too much, he had some individual brilliant moments in it that probably would have blown the roof off and we were probably a chance to keep us alive. So I think his finishing was a bit problematic, but I thought he was back at the right time for us to have him in the middle. But yeah, over the next few weeks, I'd like to see less reliance on Shields and Zeebel and the other blokes that are probably on the older end of the scale.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of leaders, we'll go to that now. I was going to do it later, but we'll go to it now, Marnie. Jack Zeebel, obviously, Siobhan brought it up. He's still leading the way on the ground with his actions and words, even though he doesn't have a title anymore, but that doesn't matter. Jai Simpkin, got himself into a situation on the weekend where goals were hard to come by, and they had a set shot 35 metres out on a slight angle, and he gives away a 50-metre penalty. We had a bit of momentum for the game as well, and I know it was soft, throwing away GPS, but he can't be putting himself into those situations, can he? Because this isn't an isolated incident. He did it in round 2 against Fremantle when we were having a set shot for goal. He gave away a free kick. He's got to be better than that, doesn't he?
Yeah, a bit strange, that one, to be honest. But then I'll play devil's advocate, right? Mm. Paul Curtis had an incident on the wing or with, I don't know who the St Kilda player was, but he was tunnelled and he was rewarded a free kick. And Jack Zeebel went up to the St Kilda player and just went at him. And that, to me, is leadership. Standing up for your younger teammates when there's an undisciplined act on the field. Now, I don't know what the context was behind Simpkins' undisciplined action, and you're right, it's not the first time this has happened, and it was a really strange thing to do. Like, it's just sort of one of the more bizarre actions I've kind of seen for the year, and we've seen quite a few already. So without knowing the context of what's happened, I don't know if I'd be able to make a proper comment. It's not isolated and it does seem undisciplined, you don't know what was said or what happened. And when I look at what Zeebel did for Paul Curtis during the game, I think, again, it's probably a bit silly, I also loved it as a North person to see him stand up for his younger teammate. So it's hard with Jai. I think the thing with the co-captains for me, I see Simpkin as the on-field leader and McDonald's the off-field leader. And I think I've heard things that sort of is how that kind of came about. And it was very much a player-led decision for co-captaincy. And I think it's been I think he'd be frustrated too. And that can come from an element of passion. You're frustrated that you think he probably would have thought, if I think we're in the game, he's surely thinking we're in the game. He's the one on the field after all. And it's probably from a place of frustration, a frustration that we're just not, you know, we're just not converting the way he probably would like. He's obviously, you know, also come back from injury over the past couple of weeks. If he's even 100% fit, that's another thing, because he's probably not playing to his outstanding best. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been as impactful and explosive as he is when he's fit and firing. So I think you look at the incident on its own, you don't think about anything else. It's dumb and it's undisciplined. And yes, it changes the course of the game. But when you think about all these other factors, it's really, I find it hard to make a proper judgment on it. So that's kind of where I sit with that. But I think that it will take time. I think Simkin in particular is still really young. And I think maybe, you know, often when there's press and interviews and media, it's McDonald that's fronting up. So I just think that it's a learning curve and he'll learn. Don't tell me that Andrew Swallow or Jack Siebel never did something silly, you know, back in the day when they were captains too. So frustrating, and yes, it changed. It probably did change momentum of the game, but were we ever really in it to begin with? I mean, I thought we were, but in reality, you're kicking four goals for the game. It's really hard to see you being able to kick a winning score. So that's kind of where I sit on that one.
Yeah, no, and that's fair enough. Yeah, no, and we've got to remember he is 24 years old. He's only 2 years older than Tarryn Thomas, and we know all the issues he has with his immaturity and what he's doing off the field. So, yeah, no, we are putting a little bit of pressure on him, but unfortunately that comes with the territory. And you've got to be careful. Like, umpires always look for an excuse to give away 50-metre penalties or free kicks, reverse free kicks and so forth. And generally, they miss the first one, and it's usually a person that remonstrates that they gets the penalty. So you just got to be careful. I understand, you know, you're sticking up for Darcy Tucker, who got caught holding the ball, and yeah, he wants to get in the face of the opposition and stick up for his teammates. But yeah, you just got to be a bit smarter sometimes. Siobhan, we are 9 rounds in now, 2-7. We're almost at the halfway point. How will you judge the rest of the year, or how many more wins you think, or yeah, like how many more wins we get, or is it being competitive every week or developing more kins? What do you want to see for the rest of the year, or is it a combination of all?
It's a combination of all for me. I think Marnie raised a good point before in that we kicked 4 goals for the game and 3 of them came off the boot of Nick Larkey. So what I'd like to see, I know this was probably an exception because Coleman Jones was out with concussion and we had obviously Coleman will miss probably the rest of the year or majority of it, but I'd like to see our forward 50 look a bit more dangerous, and I'd like to see us work on the cohesion when going inside 50. It's rare we actually win the midfield battle in the last few weeks, and when we do, it seems that the forward 50 options are Larky or bust, or there aren't many actually to go to, or the kicks are so skewed. So I'd like to see us probably work on that. And also our finishing has been problematic in the last few weeks too. So we might not get many chances. So let's try and convert the ones we do get. I do think the team lacks polish, but that will come in time. That's obviously not a criticism. We're young, we're inexperienced, we're learning a new game plan. So I'm assuming as the game plan's implemented, as time goes on and that starts to become second nature to the players, the polish and finish will probably come with that a little bit more. I'd like to see more players debut for the club. I'd like to see the youngsters continue to improve, whether that's they have a breakout game or they become more consistent. I feel like some players probably need to get that consistency, and that will come with more games and more time. I'd like to see the skills probably improve. And like I mentioned before, as the game plan is implemented and becomes more of a natural thing for the players, I'm assuming the skills will improve. But some players' skills are really, it's scary to watch sometimes. You just think, God, he's got the ball in his hands. What's going to happen now? So I'm hoping that will improve as the year goes on. And certainly just continuing to pressure the opposition. I feel like effort costs nothing. And when we come up against the good good size, which we'll get more of in the next few weeks. As long as we can harass and try and win the ball back, I don't think that we're going to get thumped. So in terms of wins, I haven't thought about it too much. I'd like to finish the year with probably 5-6 wins if possible. So another 3 or 4 for the year. I can only see us really winning the next game we play against West Coast. Maybe a fluky win somewhere along the line against another lowly side, and hopefully we snag another win somewhere else. So like last year, I think it's more based on the holistic game and being competitive rather than winning. But that would be nice because we saw what it did for the group in the early part of the year. So wins are invaluable to a young group. So fingers crossed we can snag some more of those. But yeah, I'd like to see some help for Larky down there. And let's just hope that can happen this week, because kicking 4 goals for the game in an AFL team is not going to win you too many games.
Yeah, Marnie, we aren't kicking enough goals, which Siobhan has talked about right now. Yeah, averaging 64 points per game, 10 goals per game, basically, over the course of the year. I was hoping we could average around 75 points a game. And generally, teams that average around that are probably going to finish bottom 2 and 3. How can we fix that? In your opinion, is it just about getting the help like Siobhan said with Larky? Because he's kicked 19, Stevenson's kicked 12, Zerha's kicked 11 goals for 13 for the year, with about 6 out on a full as well. Yeah. Then you go to Curtis Taylor with 6 goals in 8 games, and Paul Curtis is only struggling with only 4 goals as well. So we're not getting enough spread. We're not getting any midfielders kicking goals as well.
No, it's a few things for me. I think definitely we need help for Larky. And on Sunday afternoon, it became glaringly obvious how much we miss Charlie Combin. Just his ability to bring the ball to ground, his competitiveness in the air, his tackling pressure, you know, all of those things missed. But he wasn't contributing on the scoreboard either. So we really need a lift from Coleman Jones. He has shown a little bit in the games that he has played, but nowhere near enough that's acceptable for me. I think we really need a solid second fiddle to Larky, because Larky was, you know, he was excellent on the weekend. I was actually really surprised that he managed to kick 3 goals. I thought he'd be double teamed the whole time and just would get nowhere near it. So we know he converts, but we also know he's going to be the number one targeted forward in our forward line. So that's the first thing. The second thing is our small forwards are nowhere near lively enough. They don't crumb the ball. There's no goal sense for me. You know, you think about, you know, a Lee Adams or a Boomer Harvey or a Lindsay Thomas, and even to some degree, you know, Robin Nahas when he played for North. It's the hunting mentality. Saw ball, get ball, through the big sticks. And there's just no urgency with our small forwards at the moment. They all play a role. But with the exception of Stevenson, and Zerha's been rotated through the middle, so I won't put him aside as well. But with the exception of Stevenson, what are they doing? Like, what are they actually doing in the 120 minutes of the game? Because it doesn't appear that they're really contributing much to the game. And there's only so many small forwards that can just be a pressure small forward. The goal's got to come from somewhere. They're not really coming from many places at the moment. So I think that's it. And then it's the inaccuracy thing. I think on Sunday, it was just a lack of confidence across the board. And I think that actually went from both North and St Kilda. And I reckon both teams psyched each other out to a degree. No one was kicking straight. Not even St Kilda was kicking straight. I mean, they won the game by 30 points. If they kicked straight, they would have thrashed us. So I think it's a lack of confidence. Obviously, it was an off day for so many, Cam Zerha in particular, but across the board, it was an off day. And when one or two start missing, well, then it's like a domino effect. They all kind of started missing. So that, for me, I think in terms of kicking goals, the inaccuracy in front of goal was an outlier for me on Sunday. There are a couple that, you know, haven't been fantastic in front of goal for the year and probably need to fix that up a little bit. But for me, the issue lies with the lack of support for Larky, both in the air and then on the ground. Also, Larky isn't one to really bring it to ground that often. He either marks it or he's outmarked by the opposition. So, you know, even to have someone that can bring the ball to ground so the small forwards can get moving and get busy and, you know, get a bit of hungry for the goals. I mean, that for me is the big, I think we've obviously got a gem in Larky. It would be great to have some support for him, but the support really needs to come from the small forwards. That, I think, is our biggest problem, and we have spoken about that previously. So that, for me, is the key area to address.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about small forward that debuted, Blake Drury. Siobhan, I thought he was very good, particularly in the first half. You know, he showed more in probably the first 5 minutes than Kane Turner has shown for the last month. He gave the team real energy, which is what we needed on the weekend. Pressure was good, got himself in the contest, and was front and square to a lot of contests, particularly in the first half. A pretty good debut, wasn't it?
He was great. I really thought he was excellent. The first quarter, he had a chance to kick his first goal and unfortunately missed, but I thought his presence across the ground was great. I said last week that a bit of youthful exuberance does wonders for the team, and I'm not surprised we played well with those changes that we had at the end of last week. I'm really not. And having a debutant and someone with the energy of Blake Drury was really great to see. I mean, he didn't set the world on fire, but harassed, chased, and when he had the ball, I actually felt he made some really good decisions. So there's a lot to work with him. And when he gets 5, 10, 15, 20 games under his belt, I'm actually excited to see what he can do. And also, I think he's quite a versatile player. I think he can play back, he can play forward. So we saw him play a bit of wing on the weekend. So, I thought he was really impressive. And a bit of that youth in the team did wonders.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I've noticed about him off-field, apparently he's got really good leadership ability, Marnie. Future draft prospect, we've talked about him before, Siobhan, Nick Watson, raved about what a leader he is last week. Yeah. Even though he is in his first game, I think he leads with his actions and could be in a leadership group within a few years. Did you know he was a leader at junior level? He was captain of, I think he was Eastern Rangers.
Yeah, so he was actually the captain of the Vic Metro side in the under-18s.
Yeah, well,
so
yeah.
That's the Vic Metro team are the best prospects from the metropolitan area of Victoria. So clearly has excellent leadership qualities as captain of Vic Metro. So I noticed out on the ground that his voice was quite loud too, sitting at the game. So for a first gamer, that was really impressive. And Will Phillips was drafted also as a potential leader, and same with Drury. So I think we've also gone really smart in the way we've drafted some of these players that have leadership ability. And even though he was a rookie selection, there's no doubt that also says a lot to me about his character, in that he was picked up as a rookie, yet has worked his way into the side by round 8. So obviously has great determination and work ethic, toiled away in the VFL, was willing to try different positions on the ground to break into the team. And I think he certainly plays next week, and hopefully we persist with him over the course of the year.
Yeah, look, it looks like he's cemented for probably at least the next month, you'd have to think, based on that performance. Marnie, should Zerha have been drug tested after the game for some of his shots at goal? Geez, they were way off.
Yeah, it's funny, hey, because he kind of, you mentioned Dean, he's kicked 11, 13 for the year with about 25 on the full. So it hasn't been a great start to the year in front of goals for me. He wasn't good on Sunday. I mean, he was good. He actually played really well, but he just butchered everything. But I think, like I said, I think it comes down to a confidence thing for the team across the board. And, you know, for me, I just want him to dust it off and just go at it again next week. I mean, you just want to put it behind you and at the very least just use it to spur you on to do better the following week. I think that Cam's been one of our best players throughout the year. I think he's contributed so well, both in the middle and then pushing up forward. And I think that he's fitter and he is the ever competitive, ever aggressive player that I think we need more of too. So for me, unfortunate that he had such an off day, but I'd just dust it off and move on to next week. To be honest, I wouldn't be dwelling on it too much.
Do you think it could be an ongoing problem? I'll stick with you, Barney, with this one. Do you think it could be an ongoing problem? 11 goals, 13. So, yeah, do you think psychologically he's probably a bit worried?
Look, I'd hope not, to be honest. Last season, he was a bit of a slow burn. He had a really slow, I don't know if you guys remember, he had a really, really slow start to the year. He was pretty woeful, just didn't really do much for the first sort of 8 to 10 rounds of the season. In the second half of the year, kind of exploded and was just playing sensational football. He's a really important part of our side, and we probably can't afford for him to have those slow starts. And if he, you know, in the next couple of weeks, if he starts kind of kicking himself into gear, that's great. But we probably need that from the get-go. It could be a combination of things, really. It also could just come down to a pressure thing. For me, he plays best when he's allowed to run free and kind of do his own thing. But with Larky kind of being the only real target up forward, it almost puts pressure on him, whether it's intentional or not, to step up. And I know it sounds awful, but I don't know if that's him. I think he likes to kind of be the third or fourth in the pecking order, so he can kind of run free and kind of not be the center of attention and do what he wants. And then he kind of comes out and, you know, kicks a bag. So for me, that's the kind of player that Zerha is. And I think he's a confidence player too. So I don't think the whole team missing and then him continuously missing shots and not really able to get his act together helped. So I think it's probably a combination of a few things. I think he'll be fine. And I reckon that while, you know, he's obviously kicked more behinds and he has goals, that's only as a result of this weekend. I mean, he'd been kicking, you know, more shots than missing. Sunday was obviously an outlier for him, and that would have contributed to that scoreline quite heavily. I think he'll be fine. I would think Sunday is an outlier, but I do think, again, if support comes in for Larky, it will indirectly help Zerha's game for me.
Fair points, I guess. Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And you just got to back him in that you'll get over the yips, I guess. Siobhan, one player that intrigues me that is a forward and looks a class above at VFL level is Sam Lowson. Do we get him in the mid-season draft if he is draft eligible?
It's an interesting question, because I haven't done a lot of research and I'm not certain about what type of players are actually out there and available, but it looks like we will be getting either pick one or two in the mid-season draft. So we'll have one of the early selections to choose the best talent that's available and ready-made for us. But he looks a good prospect, doesn't he? And we were just talking before about how our small forwards are non-existent, really, up there, other than Stevenson's last few weeks. They're not putting on a lot of pressure. They're not kicking goals. So that's Sam Lowson's specialty, isn't it? He's been excellent for the VFL team. Now, we know there are players that are very good VFL players and then go into an AFL system and they really struggle. Unless we pick up Sam Lowson and enable him to play in the AFL, we won't know if he's one of those players or not. But he looks like he's got the smarts and the skills and certainly the runs on the board at VFL level to be a crafty, smart, quick small forward that could kick you a couple goals every week. So considering all this, I'd probably say he'd be a big chance to go, especially because he's come through our program with North VFL, that we would potentially give him an AFL lifeline and see what he's made of. I mean, there's not as if there's anyone that he's really taking the spot of if he does come in. So it'll be nice to have a bit more pressure up in the small forward department, and Lowson could be that player.
Yeah, Marnie, we don't have much depth at the football club as far as small forwards. I mean, we've got Blake Drury now, but then you're looking at Kane Turner, Jack Marnie played on a wing, Phoenix Spicer. I guess the downside, he will be 28 years old soon, but he could help us right away. Where do you sit with someone like that?
I've always been a big advocate for bringing in mature-aged players. For me, and this is... I think it depends on what he's going to bring. Like Siobhan said, you don't really know what you're going to get from him at an AFL level. He's obviously excelling at a VFL level. But, you know, I think having a good role model on field to really learn from and be able to absorb their skill, their composure, how they are, you know, in the ups and downs of the game, I think is really handy. But you're right, our small forward department is just really there's nothing happening there. So for me, give him a shot. I mean, if he's going to be 28, or he is 28, if he's a solid player, that's still 6 or 7 years of good football under him.
Yeah, well, we're expecting
to make some magic happen in the next 3 to 5 years. So if you never know where that's going to land him. But I don't. He's still on the right side of 30 for me. I'd give him, you know, I don't see why we don't give him a shot, because he'd be able to come into the side right away. For me, we desperately need something now to add something to our forward line. It does not function. And then, you know, if he works for a few years, then we find a like replacement down the track, great, but we don't have one right now. So for me, I'd be absolutely willing to give.
Yeah, it reminds me of a bit of Luke Bruce, very smart player, inside forward 50, very classy. He'll just set, if he doesn't set things up, he'll get you a score. He's kicked 16 goals in 6 games and looks very fit, as opposed to previous years working with the VFL program in Coburg. So he looks like he's toned up a lot and looks very fit, playing even in midfield for spells in the VFL. So definitely an option. He'll probably be talked about more probably over the next couple of weeks if he continues his good form. Siobhan, we have to talk about Ben Cunnington. 7 disposals in 3 quarters and subbed out again for the 2nd game in a row at Marvel. Is Marvel just too fast a track for him and he gets exposed with his lack of pace on the outside?
That's a good point. So it's a really uncomfortable topic because Ben Cunnington is a legend of the North Melbourne Football Club, a stalwart of the club, and a player that we were all so excited to see come back play for the club, but I just feel like he's not the same player that's come back. We talked a little bit about it last week, that it looks like he's lost an additional step of pace, but he never actually had a lot of pace to begin with. But Marvel Stadium under the roof against St Kilda, who are a fast ball movement team, he just looked like he had gumboots on, like he was really stuck in the mud on the ground. I was surprised to see him get subbed off with 7 disposals. I felt like he had a bit more of the ball, but when it comes to any sort of spread, you can forget about that. He still has the ability to get the ball out to the outside players, but I'm even finding that he looks as though he's spending a lot of time on the outside of contest, not even in contest, which alarms me as well, because if he is the clearance beast, as Clarko refers to him as, which we've known him as, he should probably be getting the ball on the inside and then palming it off. But it looks like he's not really getting his hands on the ball on the inside. So if he's not winning it on the inside, he's slow on the outside. Where does he fit into the team? Unfortunately for him, I think if he has been subbed off with 7 touches, he may actually miss this week. Whether or not he needs to go back to the VFL, get his confidence up, find a bit of the footy, and then come back into the AFL system and go, I've still got it type thing. I'm not sure, but I feel as though someone like a Hugh Greenwood, who's missing out probably because him and Cunnington play a very similar role, offers more, gives more, and is able to contribute more than Ben Cunnington at the moment. And I know that's really hard to say, but I do feel like he would be doing the club a disservice by playing on next year unless things dramatically turn around in the second half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, we aren't questioning anything about him, what he's been through, and the fact that he is playing football again is a real huge effort. I think it was 18 months ago, he couldn't even walk to the toilet without gasping for air and then going back to bed and sleeping the rest of the day. So he's gone through a lot, and, you know, he was already 30 when he was going through this, so obviously it's affected him, you know. So, but, you know, it's, Marnie, are you worried about him? I talked to you on Sunday about him, and you sort of said his form's been quite solid the last few weeks. Are you worried about what he's producing right now?
It's hard. I think we obviously expect a certain level of him, and that's just because this is what we're used to. We've been spoilt to watching him just absolutely dominate year in, year out for, you know, the past few seasons. And it breaks your heart to watch. I actually did think he had been our best player for the, you know, against both Melbourne and Gold Coast, if not the best, then one of the best. But you made a good point, Dean. Maybe under Marvel, under the roof of Marvel, the game's just kind of going at a frenetic pace and he just can't keep up. I'm glad that Siobhan brought up the H word, because I probably would have been accused for hectic bias if I was the one to bring it up first. But Hugh Greenwood has to play. I mean, the impact that he's had on the side when he has played, even when he came on as the sub on Good Friday. I mean, you think he had about 10 touches in the last quarter, and the tackling pressure. I mean, he's playing a step ahead in the VFL. At the very least, maybe Cunnington just needs a rest. Just rest him for the week. Shields was rested a few weeks ago, and that was fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with resting the player. Maybe he plays every second week. I don't know what the answer is. But, you know, you've got to think about how we can move this team forward and be able to make the most of this year and what we do have left of the year. I mean, in terms, we're not even halfway through the season yet, but I'm talking about our year as a club and what we need to gain out of it to move forward next year is, I actually hate myself for saying it, but is playing Cunnington, at least playing him week in, week out, doing us more of a disservice than he is a service. I can't believe it's coming out of my mouth right now. But you know what I mean? It's just, anyway, it's a very hard topic to talk about. It's really hard to think about. He has, I think it's 12 or 13 games to go until he makes his 250th. That's another thing worth considering as well. Would he be able to play another? I think he's sitting on 237 at the moment, because I was talking to someone about this over the weekend. Will he be able to put together another 13 games to be able to hit the milestone? Is that what we're trying? Is that what we want to do? I don't know. And like I said, it makes me feel uncomfortable just talking about it and talking about it in this way, because it is such an emotional topic. So I don't know what the answer is. I know what my personal answer is, at least for the short term, and that is obviously to give Greenwood a run. I've been banging on about this pretty much since the day he was taken out of the side in round 5, and he hasn't come back since. And I think that's the thing, is Greenwood deserves to play. I don't care what anyone says or thinks, how old he is or this or that. He deserves to play on form. And you want to play, if you're playing a handful of veterans, you want to play the veterans that are really contributing to the side, and Greenwood is one of those players. But if Clarko wants to, but then on the flip side, again, I thought Cunnington had a very good fortnight leading into Sunday's game. So whether there are certain grounds he plays and certain grounds he doesn't, or whether he's rested every few weeks, or whether he's subbed off, whether he is the sub every week, I don't know what the answer is. I'm thankfully not the one that has to make that decision, but what I would do is play Greenwood.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's why we're paying Clarkson $1 million a year to, you know, make these decisions for us. I mean, things have changed a lot since, obviously got diagnosed, with testicular cancer in 2020. Yeah, he was the number one midfielder. Goldstein looked for him in the ruck. Now it's LDU and Simpkins midfield now, and he might be just struggling or just a little bit when the ball's not tapped to him as much. So, yeah, things change sometimes. But, it's going to be interesting to see if he does come up this week. Maybe the game in Tassie, where it's an outside game, it might be a bit of a slower game. That might keep him in the side. But right now, you probably can't afford to. If it was at Eddie Had, you'd probably have to, or Marvel, whatever you call it, you'd probably have to think that you'd always have to get omitted. And like you said, Hugh Greenwood would probably offer a lot more right now. And you're not the only one that's saying that, Marnie. I know, you've been a big fan of him for a long time. I think he follows you on Twitter now. You were telling me the other day. So obviously he's hearing things from you as well. So, yeah. But a lot of people are sort of saying, why isn't he getting a game? So, yeah, no, a selection will be interesting this week. And we might as well go to this week, Siobhan. A big grudge match this week coming up against Port Adelaide. A lot of talk about booing lately, and it's come under scrutiny from Collingwood supporters, pretty much booing every player in AFL right now. Should we boo Jason Lord Francis this week?
So really, it's a controversial topic at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
It's it's probably the wrong round to be playing Port Adelaide as well because of the whole incident with Buddy Franklin. It's a big topic at the moment, the booing of players. But to be honest, I was confused as to why opposition players were booing Jason Horne-Francis. I can see why now in some ways. I don't think it was because they feel sorry for North and feel sorry for the situation that we went through. I think it started as let's just have an opportunity to boo a player and it just continued that way. Kind of one person starts, the next person does it again. But this week, I think if our supporters want to boo Jason Horne-Francis, they have every right to boo him. If you look at what's actually happened, our supporters have every right to be angry. I don't want to rehash exactly what's transpired, but he was a number one draft pick that lasted 1 year at our footy club, had a poor attitude, behaved disgracefully, to be honest, and we have every right to be angry about it. So if people want to boo him, I think they should have the right to do that this week. And I would be disappointed if we listen to the footy programs or talk back radio and it's, oh, you know, it's horrible that North Melbourne supporters were booing Jason Horne-Francis. No, it's not. This week is probably the week where I think even Jason himself would probably go, okay, I'm actually expecting this. We're against Collingwood or St Kilda, who probably wasn't. So, yeah, I think it'll be a really interesting match. I don't hold out great hope that we're going to win the match, but it'll be interesting to see our players' response to him, whether or not they will ignore him entirely, hopefully not letting him run around to do what he pleases, but ignore the situation and the occasion, or whether or not they'll have a deliberate approach to make sure that he knows that they're not happy with him and make him known that they're on the ground, that this is what they're going to be dealing with today. I'd love to see that sort of response from Cam Zerha, considering all that happened in the lead up to him leaving North Melbourne. So it'll be an interesting match in that sense. And I'm hoping we show a bit of fight. I'm hoping we show spirit. Obviously, I don't want us to go around knocking his head off and getting suspended, but I'd like our players to fly the flag for the footy club and say, you know, you left this place, and even though we're struggling at the moment, we're a proud club, we're a good club, and we deserve to be treated better than the way you treated us. So I'm hoping for a response in terms of performance, and I hope that there's a bit of physicality, a bit of heat, a bit of we're here, mate, type attitude on the weekend. So one that we've penciled in. I think the AFL are cowards for putting the game in Tassie, Dean. I was hoping it would be under the roof at Marvel Stadium, but unfortunately a lot of our supporters aren't really going to be able to vent our frustrations or watch the game unfold unless you're down in Tasmania. So that was a blight on the AFL's part or a strategic move knowing what had transpired last year.
Yeah, I mean, if any club's going to be justified in booing an individual, it would be us to him, really. I mean, there's other ones that, you sort of wonder what the hell's going on. Well, Collingwood booing him in round one, it did make sense. And a lot of the booing he is getting is because of Kane Corns. There's no doubt about that and all the things that he's been saying. But, we won't focus. We'll move on and we won't focus too much on him. He's not worth it. So do you think playing in Tassie does us any favour? I'm trying to find something here, Siobhan. Does it give us a little bit of a chance?
Yes and no. I don't think that Tassie is the same fortress as it was years ago, whether or not it's because of the fact that more teams have actually played there so they know how to play the ground, or I think it's more so to do with the fact that we're not the team we used to be, so it's probably easier to play against us. And so the ground factor probably isn't as much as an influence as it was in the past. Yeah, we haven't had a great track record in recent times, and we have played Port Adelaide down at Blundstone Arena. So maybe the ground might not be the biggest deciding factor in the game, but certainly helps. I know that they know how to play Marvel Stadium really well. And Adelaide Oval, I don't think we've actually won a game there. So as much as I would have liked to play them at Marvel, Tassie's probably our best chance to actually get some sort of ground advantage.
Yeah, it'll definitely help, that's for sure. Team changes, anyone else you want to see coming this week? Maybe a Wardlaw. I know he's still got swelling in his knee, from what I understand, but he should be available this week. Missing last week probably hurts him a little bit. A lot of people talking about Eddie Ford as well, who's very good in the VFL.
I'm really hoping, I think Callum Coleman-Jones will come straight back in after the concussion as that second tall to Nick Larkey. So that pencil that change in for sure. I think that will be one. I thought Jack Marnie actually performed really well against St Kilda. It was a different role for him. He got his hands on the footy more, and I think he was able to make some pretty clever decisions with the ball. I think he was playing more small forward, which is the role he probably was drafted to play, but wasn't getting his hands on the ball when he was playing in that role. And when you're not getting your hands on the ball, it's difficult to show your skills. So I thought he was good and probably keeps his spot in the team. Wardlaw, I think, probably plays VFL again, Dean, considering he didn't play last week at all at any level with that knee injury. I think they'll probably give him another run before he debuts. So a bit more patience needed with him, as much as we'd love to see him come back in the side. We spoke about Hugh Greenwood before. I think he probably comes in for Ben Cunnington. He's probably a Cunners type that is bringing a bit more at the moment. So we'd love to see Hugh Greenwood come in and even play as a half forward. We've spoken about it a bit on the podcast, but we're lacking a marking target, really. And Greenwood's shown in the past playing for Gold Coast and the Adelaide Crows that he can be a presence up there with his big frame. So maybe having Griffin Logue go back into defence, especially with Port's tools, Greenwood could come in and play as a marking target down there too. I don't know where Tom Powell's at, but I would think that he would come back into the side if his ankle injury is looking a bit better. And the other player that's kind of the elephant in the room is probably Will Phillips. I mean, if he's not getting a game at the moment, I'm concerned about when he actually does come back into the side, Dean. So unless they have a plan for him where he plays sustained games in the VFL, I don't know why he wouldn't come back into the AFL side. He's the really big elephant in the room. And you mentioned Eddie Ford before. I think unless Paul Curtis loses his spot in the side, there's probably no room for Eddie Ford up in the forward half. Funny as that sounds after kicking four goals last week. But unless probably you'd go a straight swap for Curtis to Ford, I'm not sure where it fits into the side. And personally, I think persisting with Charlie Lazaro is a 50-50 line ball call for me. I would probably give some of the players I mentioned before a run before Lazaro. Miller Bergman was great on the weekend. Special shout out to him. He's coming along really nicely. I'm assuming you probably agree, Dean. He looks really safe and solid one-on-one. And then with the ball in his hand, he makes great decisions. And for such a light frame, he certainly puts his body on the line and competes really hard. So Bergman gets a really big tick. So he keeps his spot in the side. I don't know where Josh Goda's at with his hamstring injury, but maybe even a spot for Goda over someone like a Lazaro or a Jackson Archer, someone like that. I just think they probably bring a bit more than Lazaro does. I think he's in a bit of no man's land when I watch him play. I'm not quite sure where his role is in the side.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of those midfielders, haven't we? Like you've named a few there: Tom Powell, George Wardlaw, Hugh Greenwood, Will Phillips, and yeah, there's only so many of those spots you can take. So unfortunately, there's always going to be two or three missing out. So yeah, what about would you consider Eddie Ford for Curtis Taylor?
Yeah, I would. I can never question Curtis Taylor's effort weekly. Yeah. I think he tackles hard, he chases, he tries really hard. But I mentioned this week on Twitter as well that I think Curtis Taylor's just probably not doing enough, and I think his skills let him down at times. When he gets the ball, I'm also not feeling as though he's going to make a great decision with it. So unless his output improves, effort only gets you so far. I think you can't question that, but I'm hoping to see some more scoreboard effort from him. I know he plays as a half forward, so a bit more impact on the scoreboard, and just his disposal probably needs a bit of work. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Eddie Ford get a gig over someone like a Curtis Taylor, if that's the way Clarko wants to go, by giving Ford a chance. He has been playing well in the VFL, so potentially that change for sure, Dean.
Yeah. Welcome back, Marnie, too. You've been you cut out a few minutes ago. We're just talking about team changes, and we were just about to say that I know you want Daniel Howe and Kane Turner back in, but anyone else?
Oh, my God, please. In what world would I want either of those two in the team? Eddie Ford, please. I know I just caught the tail end of what Siobhan was saying. He's got to play. Curtis Taylor and Paul Curtis, I don't think either of them are offering enough at the moment to justify playing over Ford, at least giving Ford a shot. 12 touches and 3 goals in the first quarter in the VFL on Sunday puts a fair case together to have a crack. We need something. We need some firepower. If Coleman Jones is fit, he plays. I think Griffin Logue, he was okay on Sunday. I felt kind of sorry for him. I don't think he has the same impact that he does have when he plays in defence. But my worry, and it maybe it's maybe Port do boast quite a tall forward line, so I don't know, you know, maybe it won't matter as much this week. But I thought Mackay played his best game for the year with just the one other tall forward in core, one tall defender in core playing alongside him. So whether the dynamic of three tall defenders is really impacting his personal game, I'm not sure. And that's something I'd like to explore in the next few weeks when we do face a team that potentially doesn't have as threatening of a forward line as Port Adelaide do. And the conflict I have there is Cor's actually had quite a couple of really good games. He's stringed a couple of really good games together. I'm not his biggest fan in general, but he has been quite good over the past couple of weeks. So, yeah, I'd probably push Logue back into defence and I'd play Coleman Jones. I don't know if I would go with Lazaro as the sub again, and it's hard because I do love Lazaro. Just as a person, he's a great guy, but for me, I would probably opt for a Will Phillips or a Tom Powell. I just think they just offer more, and I think long term, that's probably the direction we'll be heading in. I don't know where Charlie Lazaro fits. We were having this conversation last week about players that have shown potential. He shows a lot of potential, but that's all he shows. Haven't really taken that next step, and I know that he hasn't had a consistent run at senior level, but he hasn't really proven that he kind of deserves a run over a Phillips or a Powell for me. Excuse me. And then obviously for me, I would love to see Hugh Greenwood back into the side. Yeah. I sound like a broken record. Everyone's probably so sick of me saying it, but I know I'm not alone. I'm leading this campaign of bringing him back into the senior side. He deserves to play. He really deserves to play. And I think at the very least, Cunnington needs a rest. So maybe it's just this week. And then reassess when we play the Swans back at Marvel the following week. But Greenwood has to play. His form is too good at the moment, and he's crying out for opportunity. And this is the pressure. You want players in the VFL to put pressure on the senior players to perform. And when they don't, you've got to reward them when they step up. I think he has to play. And I've got rose-coloured glasses on, I know that, but I also know I watch enough football to know that he deserves to be in our starting 22, because he's definitely in the best 22 on form at the moment.
Yeah, look, I mean, I guess there is competition for that spot in the midfield. Like I was talking to Siobhan before he cut out before, like we do have Tom Power, we have George Wardlaw, we have Hugh Greenwood, Will Phillips, Charlie Lazaro. Charlie Lazaro's at the back of that pecking order. His form in the VFL has been quite solid, so I can't question him for that. But it's just going to be hard for him to get that opportunity when you sort of think you got players like a Will Phillips, Tom Power, and George Wardlaw. You think, they've got a high ceiling. probably Charlie Lazara. So, yeah, it's going to be hard for him to get that opportunity. And, yeah, look, you know, I don't want to write him off. He only played 25 minutes on the weekend, so I'm certainly not going to write him off. I'd like to see him get a run, but it's just going to be hard for him to get a run, unfortunately, for Charlie. In saying that all, Siobhan, what's your final prediction for the game?
Yeah, I'll get to that in one sec. I'd like to make one more point just on the team changes. When I looked at the team changes for this week going into the game, preparing for the podcast, what I did realise is our list is very, very skewed when it comes to how many midfield half-forward players we have compared to key position talent. And we knew that looking at the draft, how many midfielders we've drafted, I just think this year I'm really hoping the club goes down the path of key position talent. And in saying that too, that we really fight tooth and nail to keep Ben McKay. He's back to his best on the weekend. He was brilliant, like Marnie said. Read the play really well. Great one-on-one, intercept marking king. So I just think we really need to start focusing on key position talent, because we can win the ball out of the midfield as much as we like, but if you're kicking it to no one and you don't have a really solid back line either of tall players, it's just hard. So I'll leave it at that. But I did notice that, and I think something that we should be looking at going forward. Yeah, the final prediction. So Port Adelaide are a very good team, and it pains me to say it because we have their first round draft pick, and they also have that player playing for them now. So it's disappointing to see them playing so well, but they're a really well-balanced, well-rounded side. It helps for us that Junior Rioli is suspended, because I know he usually gets a hold of us when he was playing for the Eagles. So I think it'll be a tough game. It'll be a really tough game because, like I said, they've got a really solid midfield, tall forwards that will be really challenging, and a lot of smalls that are performing, and their back half is solid too. So I'm not trying to be a downer or pessimistic, but I do think this will be a 6-7 goal loss, and they'll probably just be too good in most facets of the game. So they've probably got too many players that we have to shut down, and looking at our list, unless we get the forward mix right and the midfield really dominates, we're not going to kick a winning score. So a disappointing afternoon for us in Tassie, I think.
Yeah. What about you, Marnie? What's your final prediction? You think we'll cause a boil over when we buy 10 goals?
No. It'll be an absolute bloodbath, and I reckon there's just going to be so much emotion in this game. But we will be on the receiving end of quite a comprehensive loss, I would say. Port's just too good. There's no.
Yeah, they are.
They are very, very good. And the more this team plays together, the better they get.
Yeah.
So I think we're looking at quite a comprehensive loss down in Tassie, but I think there'll be a lot of fight in it, and I think there'll be a lot of emotions will be running high. I think the crowd will be very, very vocal and very heavily involved as well. While it might be a disappointing result, I don't doubt that it won't be an entertaining spectacle, that's for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it'll be quite heated early, but as a game breaks open, I think we'll struggle to keep up with them. To be honest with you, we're quite a slow team on the outside. We've talked about individuals that are quite slow, and they might expose us. I'm not too sure what the weather's going to be on Saturday in Tassie, but it might suit us if it's a little bit of rain. So just to make it a bit of a slot fest, but we'll see how we go, ladies. It's been a pleasure having you on. Did you want to add anything else before I let you go, Siobhan?
No, just fingers crossed for a competitive performance this weekend. It's a tough challenge, and Marnie makes a great point. I think it'll be an emotional game for those of us watching from home, and I'm sure the players and the fans at the ground. So fingers crossed that we are competitive and we put up a fight. But, it'll be one of those games where I think we've just got to temper our expectations and hope for the best. But go Roos, and fingers crossed for a good game.
Yeah, very well said, Siobhan. Thanks for that. Marnie, fit check Thursday tomorrow?
We'll see. I'm working from home tomorrow, so I'm not sure how much luck you'll have. But hopefully, with any luck, this time next week, we'll be sitting here talking about Hugh Greenwood's best on-ground performance against Adelaide.
Yeah, 3 goals and a win, so that'll be good. 30 touches.
I'll be waiting for it. That is what I'm waiting for.
I think we all will be. So hopefully he gets picked. That'll be a start. So yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, 100%. Ladies, the pleasure is all mine again tonight. It was good to get your thoughts on where you think we are at and talk about some individual players as well. I really appreciate you coming on the show, and I might chat to you next week.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Dean. Thanks,
Marnie. So thanks to those lovely ladies for coming on tonight. That's it for tonight's show. I'm sure you all enjoyed it. Once again, thanks to all you lovely listeners for the likes, retweets, comments you all put out for the show. It's much appreciated. I couldn't do this podcast without your support. If you can leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform you use as well, that would be awesome. So I'll be back on Sunday for the Hangover show. I probably won't have time in the next couple of days to do another show. So yeah, enjoy the rest of your week. Hope you all have a lovely weekend. Hopefully the Roos get a win. Today, I will leave a shout out to Nathan Granger on Instagram at dudes_dad29. Until now, then, sorry, I've lost it. Bye for now, and go Roos.